Welcome to the Bogosity Podcast for the 21st of September 2015, the podcast that puts spoiler alerts on state secrets. This is your host, Shane Killian, and joining me again this week is Chris Hangartner. Chris, welcome back to the podcast.
It's been a while.
Let's power cycle the news of the bogus. And our first story has to do with the Kelton Public Library in Lebanon, New Hampshire. And they have this great idea, and we've talked about this before when we've talked about things like VPNs when you're at a library or a hotel or a coffee shop or somewhere.
Yeah.
You don't know who's looking in on you. You don't know who's snooping on you, and that might compromise transmissions that you want to keep private. So they decided to put the entire library on the Tor network.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, we've talked about this before, too. Tor is an encrypted network where all of your transmissions bounce around through this series of encrypted nodes, and no one really knows about anyone else except the one it's talking to directly. And then you have an exit node, which is the one that finally decrypts it and sends it out. So they decided that the best way to protect their patrons was to put it on the Tor network and also have it be a Tor relay. Because if you're doing relays, you're actually taking transmissions from elsewhere on the internet and sending them out, so that even if they did see weird things coming out of the library's traffic, they wouldn't be able to tell if it was a library patron or someone else on the Tor network.
Ah, good. Bundle the enemy with confusion.
Yep. Well, turns out the Department of Homeland Security didn't like it and sent the library and state authorities kind of a nasty letter about it.
Let me guess, because of that, we can't track you, so we can't tell if you're harboring terrorists.
Well, what they were saying was that they were setting up a system that could be exploited by criminals.
Same argument.
Yeah, and the library panicked and pulled the plug on the project while they figured out what was going on.
Yeah, the feds are just like George R.R. Martin's Game of Thrones. You grow something to like and attach, and then they come and take it away from you.
But the ironic thing about it is the federal government had a lot to do with the development of Tor, the NSA and the State Department and things like that. I mean, they really, it's kind of a contradiction, but they really have a vested interest in keeping people's transmissions secure. It's just that they also want to snoop on people's transmissions, and so you get this kind of Hofstadter-Mobius loop going.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's okay for the state, but not good for the rest of us.
Well, and it's just like HAL 9000 in 2001. He was told about the monolith, but told not to tell Bowman and Poole, but then he was told to tell them everything, and he had these contradictory orders, and he went crazy and killed them all. That's what's going on.
I honestly could not make it through that movie.
Oh, I love that movie.
I found it extremely boring.
A lot of people do. I don't know. I mean, it's not like your fast-paced shoot-em-ups or anything like that, but
I like slow-paced movies, but that movie was too slow-paced for me.
I never had a problem with it. But anyway, so this was a plan that the Library Board of Trustees had unanimously approved at the meeting in June, and it was based on something from Boston librarian Allison Macrina. She has this Library Freedom Project, which is all about how you can protect patrons, not only protecting them from things like we've talked about hacking, but also protecting their ability to explore whatever controversial or subversive ideas they want to without having to worry about the government knocking on their door.
Yeah, that's pretty good, you know, because government, people like to think, well, they're not going to spy on you if you're not doing anything wrong. Oh, no, they're going to spy on you anyway.
Oh, yeah. They always say if you're not doing anything wrong, you don't have anything to worry about, if only that were true.
Yep, until you find the cop in your closet with a video recorder.
I like how Leo Laporte put it. You're probably not doing anything wrong on the commode either, but you probably don't want government looking in on you while you do it.
Yeah. Not to mention, there's so many rules and regulations that you probably don't know about that I can guarantee you that if a guy really wants to put you in prison, he'll find something to get you for.
Oh, absolutely. You turn right, you break one regulation. You turn left, you break another. You go straight, you break a third. And if you turn around and go the other way, back where you came, you break another one.
Yeah.
They can always get you for something.
Oh, yeah. There's a really good website which has dumb laws for like states and other countries, and some of them are enforced and some of them are not.
Yeah, I think it's just dumblaws.com, isn't it?
Yeah. Like my home state of Wisconsin, they actually have a rule that limits on how much margarine you're allowed to import into the state. Apparently, it was passed during a time when margarine was becoming popular and the big butter companies didn't like this, so they lobbied the government to pass harsh regulations on margarine manufacturers.
Also known as margarine.
Yeah. Oh, I call it margarine.
So anyway, DHS spokesman Sean Neudauer kind of tried to hand wave all this away. He said he was simply providing, quote, visibility / situational awareness. The use of a Tor browser is not, in or of itself, illegal, and there are legitimate purposes for its use. However, no, there should be no however there. It's legal. There are legitimate purposes for its use. That's it.
Yeah.
That should be it. No however.
Yep.
Anyway, however, the protections that Tor offers can be attractive to criminal enterprises, or actors in Homeland Security investigations will continue to pursue those individuals who seek to use the anonymizing technology to further their illicit activity.
Yeah, and you know what else attracts criminals? Cash money.
Yeah.
So by their logic, we should ban all cash money, because without cash money, it's difficult to do illegal transactions. And actually, they are kind of doing that, though.
Yeah, the cash transactions over $10,000, and even slightly under $10,000, they'll come after you. That's crazy stuff. And something else criminals like is cars, because cars let them get away from crime scenes fast.
Yeah, I'm sorry, you know, I mean, I hate criminals as much as the next person, but you can't fight criminals by passing more laws.
Right. The more laws you pass, the more criminals you make.
Not to mention, and there's actually been police officers that have said this, the reason why more laws, you know, make more criminals is not just because, you know, now there's more laws to break, but also because there's so many, you know, stuff you gotta investigate, so much loopholes that while the police are sitting on their butts looking through all these rules and regulations, the guy, you know, is getting away. That's actually why it took so long to convict Bernie Madoff.
Yeah.
Yeah, people like to say, well, if we had bigger government laws, we could have caught Bernie Madoff. He was already investigated 6 times.
Yep. And they just couldn't quite get it through the red tape.
Yeah, when you make more laws like this, all that does is creates more red tape, and criminals like red tape.
So also we have Lieutenant Matthew Isham of the Lebanon Police Force, quote, "For all the good that a Tor may allow as far as speech, there is also the criminal side that would take advantage of that as well. We felt we needed to make the city aware of it." They're just making them aware of it. They're just pointing it out. That, hey, this is a criminal enterprise, you know.
Yeah, and you know what else is a criminal enterprise? Hacking. Ever thought of that, guys?
Well, yeah, and that's the kind of thing we've talked about before, because if you say, okay, we're going to take these hacking utilities and make them illegal, well, how are people supposed to protect their network? The way you protect your network is you run those same utilities against it, and you see what gets through, and you find out where the holes are. It's the same process.
Not to mention, some of these hacking laws are very vague. Like, for instance, I'm a PC gamer, and I like to mod my games a lot. You know, by some of these hacking law definitions, you know, modding could be viewed as hacking, and people could get in trouble with it.
Well, and you got a couple of things going on. One is that simply Congress just doesn't understand this stuff. That's bad enough.
Well, yeah, I mean, didn't it happen not too long ago that Obama appointed a guy to protect us from cybersecurity, and he knew next to nothing about computer techs and all that?
Yeah, pretty much was a complete computer illiterate. But also, Congress says, okay, we need to pass this law, now we need to pass this second law, now we need to pass this third law. Well, when they pass the second law, they don't consider how it goes with the first law. When they pass the third law, they don't consider how it goes with the first. They just consider them all in isolation, and it just gets crazy when you put them together.
Yeah, I mean, the only reason why the United States hasn't become a full-blown tyrannical state, and as Penn and Teller point out, is because they don't read half the things they sign. They just skim them. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there is a good ending to this story. The library ended up investigating Tor and voted to turn it back on, and so it's back on now.
Yeah, that's good.
So, Allison Macrina, who runs the Library Freedom Project, said, quote, "This was a public referendum about privacy, free speech, and what libraries do." And because really, when this first came out, they got a lot of feedback from the public. So it was like, no, put Tor on it. Help protect people. And so hopefully that'll inspire other libraries to do this as well and get their systems on Tor. Say, if you're tired of the promos in this podcast, well, the patrons got it early and with no ads or promos. Just go to patreon.bogosity.tv and donate at any level.
Hi, I'm Dave. You may recognize me from previous Bogosity episodes. However, I'm not here to talk about that. I'm also part of a podcast, the Superplex Brothers Podcast. Head on over to superplexbros.com. You can check out the podcast for video games and pro wrestling. We also have news, reviews, and editorials, and all kinds of stuff just to talk about video games and pro wrestling and everything else that comes in between. So if you're into that, why don't you come check us out?
Oh. Okay, this next story has to do with a Wall Street Journal article by Holman W. Jenkins Jr., who would have been this week's biggest bogon emitter, except someone even bigger showed up, but we'll talk about it anyway. And the title of this article is "The FCC Imposes Netflix's Broadband Policy," and it's going to be clear very, very shortly, very quickly into it, what his actual bias is. So he says, quote, "Disney's CEO announced that ESPN was losing subscribers due to cord cutting. Poor baby, the cars came along and now they can't sell as many buggy whips. The four big cable incumbents, led by Comcast and Time Warner Cable, still earn princely returns on their past investment, but that hasn't been true of telecom overbuilders who invade cable's turf like AT&T and Verizon."
Yeah. "I don't want to lose my monopoly. Please, government, bail me out."
And they're overbuilders like we aren't starving for more options in local broadband.
Yeah. Yeah, talk about self-reflection.
So anyway, he says, quote, "More than one-third of today's expensively rolled-out bandwidth already is consumed in peak hours by a single company whose customers represent a tiny minority, about 1.2% of internet users." And, of course, he's talking about Netflix. But here's the thing about this 1.2%. That 1.2% paid for the bandwidth they're using. So if you say, okay, cable company, give me 60 megabits per second, and I'll pay this agreed-upon price, how can they complain when you actually use the 60 megabits per second? All they're really saying is, but Netflix is popular!
Yeah. You know, I'm sorry, you know, I have problems with my cable, too. I'm on Time Warner, and, they can be hit or miss at times. Because there's times where our internet or cable will go out, and, like, they'll be very helpful and supportive, and other times, they'll just not really give a shit.
Yeah, it's just... There's all sorts of horror stories. We've covered some of them. So he says, quote, "Make no mistake, the bandwidth used by Netflix is paid for, but it's paid for inefficiently by spreading the cost over all broadband subscribers." Okay, let's go into how this works. As I just said, you pay your local broadband provider for 60 megabits a second or whatever you have, and then you use that. Netflix pays Cogent, which is their ISP. They're actually not using an ISP. They're going directly to a level one provider, a top tier internet backbone provider. But anyway, they pay Cogent for all of that bandwidth. Every byte they put on the network, Cogent charges them for. So Netflix is paying to put it on the internet. You're paying to take it off of the internet, and that's how it works. But this is another case of them acting like Netflix is just muscling their way in where they're not wanted.
Yeah. How dare Netflix provide a service that people want? How dare they?
Yeah. And he says, quote, "Unfortunately, the entire confused and inane thrust of federal internet policy lately has been to sustain the Netflix distortion." Yeah, people actually being able to use the bandwidth they paid for to get the service they want. What a distortion.
Yeah. Then again, the cable companies are so used to not giving their customers what they paid for, I guess they think that's how it's supposed to work.
Yeah. Oh, and he even uses lots of weasel words like, you know, the Netflix deluge.
Yeah.
Like, we're all drowning in this Netflix traffic.
Yep. It's all about the wording.
Yep. And he says, quote, "The fact is, regulators are trying like crazy to make the necessary broadband seem like a free lunch to Netflix customers." I don't know. I look at my cable bill, and that doesn't seem like a free lunch. "A short-termism that necessarily undermines the incentive of others to compete with cable's already paid-for infrastructure." He kind of seems to miss the point that cable got all these sweetheart deals from the local government saying, hey, we'll put cable TV into your county if you let us be the only one and forbid everyone else from doing it. And they got all these sweetheart deals to be these monopolies.
Oh, yeah.
So he says, quote, "It can be seen in the slow fading of the telco broadband challenge from Verizon and AT&T, those profitless overbuilders." I think Verizon and AT&T are actually making pretty good profits, actually, but... "It can be seen in the decline of satellite television. It can be seen in cable's considerable success in reducing churn as consumers increasingly find no near substitute for cable broadband." Because you have monopolies!
Yeah. You know, I mean, I know plenty of people who flat out say that if they had the ability to do so, they would turn in their cable for things like Dish Network if they could. It's just that, like I said, there's just so many ropes you have to go through to get some of those services that it's not even worth it half the time.
Well, I've been using Dish Network since, like, 98. And I gotta tell you, they've been wonderful. They know they have competition.
Yep.
They're gonna make you happy.
Oh, yeah.
So he concludes saying, quote, in a year or two, expect to notice that the broadband speed increases aren't coming quite as reliably as they once did. You know, it's funny. Pretty much as soon as Google announced that they were bringing Google Fiber to Charlotte, Time Warner announced that they were increasing their broadband speed from 60 megabits per second to 200 megabits per second without increasing price. Come on! They've been holding out on us!
Yeah.
But I mean, it's like, you know, they're saying, oh, they should pay for broadband. Well, here's the thing. Netflix doesn't pay for broadband. Netflix's customers pay for broadband. I'm a Netflix customer, and what is it for the family plan? It's like an extra $4. It's like $10 or $12, I think, a month. I pay them $12, and so that's the money they take in to pay for things like bandwidth. Then I pay Charter for the bandwidth to be able to download it, so I'm being double charged. What do they want to do now? Triple charge me?
More stupidity from the press. What else is new?
Yeah, and it's just like the cable companies got all these sweetheart deals from local governments. You know, they have their government-supported monopolies, and then they're whining because the FCC wants to actually do something with that monopoly power to counter for what they've been doing, and then they're pretending like they're the innocent victims here. I mean, net neutrality is idiotic because it's trying to solve a problem caused by government intervention with more government intervention.
Yeah.
But
one thing I do hate, though, is that whenever a government passes a law which takes away that monopoly, all the states will say, see, the state brought down the monopoly. It's like, no, all they did was strip them of government monopoly. That's shrinking the state.
Mm-hmm. Well, that was what happened with the breakup of AT&T. You know, it was the one phone company all over the country, and
yeah, AT&T wasn't brought down because the government got involved in the economy. They got it down because they repealed some laws that basically made it virtually impossible to compete with AT&T.
Well, actually, the court struck it down.
Oh.
The court said you can't have a monopoly like that.
Yeah.
And everyone was saying, oh, look at how horrible this is gonna be now. Our phone bills are gonna go sky high, and they're gonna be horrible, and you won't be able to hear anything. And it was the exact opposite. Long distance rates started going down as more and more people competed. Connections got clearer and clearer. It was exactly the opposite.
Yeah.
If you're on the Wi-Fi in a coffee shop or hotel, anyone on that network can get your traffic. Do you really trust all of those strangers? For that matter, do you really trust your ISP? A VPN can protect you from prying eyes, disguise your location, and even foil government sensors. It's essential in this day and age. So go to vpn.pagosity.tv and you'll be taken to BoxPN. Starting at just $2.99 a month, you can get unlimited high-speed connections to VPN servers all over the world. And they don't log connections, so your privacy is assured. Traveling abroad, just VPN home, and don't worry about what those other governments are doing. Back at home, stop your ISP from traffic shaping and messing with the quality internet access you're paying good money for. You can connect from multiple machines at once, including your smartphone or tablet, and it supports all the secure standards, including OpenVPN and SSTP. Bypass sensors and surveillance with your own secure VPN connection. Go to vpn.pagosity.tv. Okay, here's another story about just how insanely paranoid our government's gotten. The chairman of Temple University's physics department, Professor Ji Zhaojing, was arrested after being accused of sharing sensitive information about American technology with China. And they had this really damning evidence, which was supposedly a schematic of a sophisticated piece of equipment called a pocket heater. And that's not really what it sounds like. It's not something you can go and buy at Walmart. They're talking about a specific piece of technology that's used in semiconductor research. It really is high tech, and Dr. Ji signed an agreement promising to keep it a secret. There's just one problem. The schematics weren't for a pocket heater, and all they had to do was show it to any expert, and they would have told them that.
Yeah.
So Dr. Ji said, quote, I don't expect them to understand everything I do, but the fact that they don't consult with experts and then charge me, put my family through all this, damage my reputation, they shouldn't do this. This is not a joke. This is not a game.
Yeah, I think China's becoming the new Soviet Union now.
Pretty much, yeah. They've been looking for the big enemy, so...
Yep. Well, we can't go to war with Russia anymore. It's not politically correct anymore to attack Russia. Well, what's next? China? Sure, nobody gives a crap about China and North Korea, so let's go after them.
Yeah. But this harkens back to something happened last year where another Chinese-American, Sherry Chen, almost the same thing happened to her. She was accused of using stolen passwords to download sensitive information and send it to China. Arrested, handcuffed, blah, 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 whole thing.
Notice how they're all Chinese-Americans.
Yeah, that's funny, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, just like how during World War II, if you were German-American, you were brought in for questioning.
Yeah. You see, this is the thing about it. War and foreign policy ends up being the biggest guilt by association racket. So the German government is doing something we don't like. Therefore, all of the German people are doing it, and everyone who contacts them, and that's where you get this crazy paranoia.
Oh, yeah. I remember reading somewhere that said, I think it was John F. Kennedy in his younger days, because he was a young man in World War II. He was investigated by the FBI simply because he was sleeping with a woman that was from Germany.
That's pretty much what it was here. They arrested her, took her away in handcuffs. She was told she faced 25 years in prison, $1 million in fines. She was suspended without pay from her job. Friends and co-workers were actually afraid to even visit. She had news trucks parked outside her home all the time. And then, just a week before she was scheduled to go on trial, the government dropped all charges without any explanation.
Yeah, but sadly not happy because, unfortunately, with the U.S. system, if you win, you still lose because they still got to pay their lawyers and all that.
Because we don't have loser pays.
It's funny because I saw a news article and one person argued that loser pay would actually make lawsuits even worse because now there's more to gain from it, and they said it would make lawyers more aggressive.
Well, other countries have loser pays. We can actually look at what they're doing. We don't have to speculate, you know.
Yeah.
But it actually isn't as bad as it seems to be because most of the countries that have loser pays have insurance that the lawyers get so that if they have to do it, the insurance company will pay it for them. Of course, they have to pay the premiums. And, you know, the insurance company's not going to insure an ambulance chaser that just runs around suing everyone inside trying to get nuisance change. He's not going to get insured.
The sad truth is that even if we do adapt that, I still think the feds wouldn't follow it.
So anyway, both of these people are represented by Peter Zeidenberg, who said he understands that, of course, the government is feeling a lot of pressure to crack down on Chinese espionage. But, quote, if he was Canadian-American or French-American, or he was from the UK, would this have ever even got on the government's radar? I don't think so.
But Shane, we need to defend our country from those godless communist Chinamen.
Yeah, and the only way we can do that, apparently, is to look at schematics, not even bother ask someone who knows what they're doing what it is, run down to the guy's house, guns drawn, storm it, search it, and take him away in handcuffs on charges in front of his wife and his two daughters. Temple University put him on administrative leave. They took away his title as chairman. He was given very strict rules about who at the school he could and could not talk to, and he said it basically made it impossible for him to continue doing research.
Wait a minute, Shane. You're defending a communist spy? I'll have HUAC sent after you. HUAC's still around, it's just not called HUAC anymore. Now it goes by many names.
Well, and if they're going after Chinese Americans, I guess we can actually be a little bit reassured that at least they're not doing like with Japanese Americans in World War II and putting them in concentration camps.
Yeah.
Yet.
Don't give them any ideas, Shane. Don't give them any ideas.
Yeah.
Yeah, some sort of aggression does come with China. They'll think about it. The government is both intrusive and racist.
When has it ever been anything else?
Now you can make Amazon purchases with Bitcoin by going to purse.bogosity.tv. That's P-U-R-S-E. Moreover, most purchases can be made at a discount. Save an average of 20% just by buying from Purse, or get even greater discounts by linking your Amazon wish list. Go to purse.bogosity.tv. Bogosity.tv is a participant in the Amazon Services LLC Associates Program, an affiliate advertising program designed to provide a means for sites to earn advertising fees by advertising and linking to Amazon.com. Just clear your cookies and go to Amazon.bogosity.tv or check the right-hand side of the podcast page for Amazon's best deals, including the deal of the day and limited-time lightning deals on all sorts of great products. So next time you buy online, go to Amazon.bogosity.tv.
And now it's time to distributively process this week's biggest bogon emitter. And this week it goes to GCHQ. We've covered them before. They're basically the British version of the NSA. And they released a document containing a lot of information about how passwords should be secured. And in a way, I'm kind of reluctant to do this because there's a lot of good information in there. But what little bogus information there is undermines everything else.
Let me guess, they say if you're going to make a good strong password, you can't use these numbers and it needs to be limited to a certain number of syllables.
Some things like that, yeah. The idea is, I mean, they're talking about all these good things you can do to help protect passwords, but they're also saying that users should make their passwords simpler. Now, here's the thing. In a sense, they're right. Making it complex by putting in all these crazy symbols and everything makes passwords more difficult to deal with. You can do a lot better by not using those and just making your passwords a few characters longer. The thing is, they said to cut down on length as well. No, long passwords. That's what it's all about.
Yeah, and I've actually heard your password doesn't even need to have like all those fancy symbols, you know, to make it secure. It's just, you know, as one person pointed out, just avoid making it into like an actual word. Just make it jumbledness. It's like just write random numbers down to make that your password, stuff like that.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's good stuff in there, like always change the default password. Make sure accounts are locked out if there's like, you know, 5 failed attempts to log in, then lock it out. Avoid putting passwords in plain text files, things like that. We saw things like that in the Sony hack. And they also, and I've talked about this too, the idea of password overload, where you just have so many darn passwords to remember that either you start making simpler passwords or you start reusing passwords, both of which are bad. So one of the things they said was to make a password of 3 words. And I guess they're going like that XKCD cartoon we've talked about, where he has the 4 random words and talks about how secure it is. The correct horse battery staple thing. But 3 isn't that secure. 4, I would say, is barely secure enough for something like LastPass, where they just run through a whole bunch of iterations to make it more secure. So, yeah, 4 words is kind of a just barely squeaking by on a really secure system. You'd probably want to use, you know, 6 words or more, and they were talking about using very common words, but of course, the bigger word list you randomly get them from, the better, so.
Yeah, because if a hacker wants to hack in there, there's more mess he's got to go through.
Yeah, but it's like on LastPass, we've talked about this, how they go through all the iterations of SHA-256, and I've talked about actually going in there and upping it for you to make it more secure. And if you do that, the 4 words is probably good enough. But, I mean, if that's the case, there's only 1 password that you have to remember, so, you know, as secure as you possibly can and just remember it is good. However, they said, quote, software password managers can help users by generating, storing, and even inputting passwords when required. However, like any piece of security software, they are not impregnable and are an attractive target for hackers.
Oh, the irony to that statement.
Yeah, I mean, okay, yeah, that's technically true. They're an attractive target, but like we talked about with the LastPass breach, they're just beat on and beat on and beat on and beat on all the time, and finally when one gets through, they don't even really get anything. As opposed to like, oh yeah, like Sony's never gotten hacked, like Adobe's never gotten hacked.
Yeah, it's like people, hackers don't hack into computers by just guessing random letters on a computer. They input programs that search for that information.
Yeah.
And as you pointed out, you know, the more noise and clutter there is, you know, in that screen, the more difficult it is for a program to get through because it can't tell what's legitimate information and what's just noise.
Yeah, and so like telling people to use a weak password just undermines everything else they said. I mean, 3 simple words, even a lowball cracker that can do 100,000 hashes per second, could crack any password, can go through the entire search space for those kinds of passwords in less than a day. And they've got another method which is actually pretty good. You can randomly generate these triplets of constant vowel consonant dash constant vowel consonant. And the thing about that is, if you randomly generate it, it's really secure, but it's pronounceable, so it's often easy to remember. But they said to use three, you know, CVC dash CVC dash CVC. If you want to be secure with that method, you need six groupings, which would make a 23-character password. And with three, that very same lowball cracker, 100,000 hashes per second, gets it in less than a day. So are you seeing a trend here?
Yeah. What is it with the world governments not knowing anything about security?
But the thing is, throughout the rest of this document, they prove that they do.
Yeah.
It's not that they're just, like, giving bad advice. It's that they're very selective about giving specific bad advice to get people to choose bad passwords so they can crack them easier.
Yeah, I have no idea what they're thinking.
Oh, and even stupid stuff like this, quote, "Ideally, you should give users a choice of passwords so they can select the one they find the most memorable." No, 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 no!
Yeah, your passwords should be random.
One secure password, and you are the only person in the universe who knows that password, put it in LastPass, randomly generate everything else.
Yeah.
And they also say, this is tip number five, quote, "Prioritize administrator and remote user accounts," and they go on into how you can make administrator accounts more secure. Look, there is no difference between saying this and saying make user accounts weaker. Don't hold back on user security. Anything you can do to make admin accounts more secure, do it for user accounts too. And we've talked about this before. People say, oh, well, what's the big deal? It's just a user account. What if they get in as a user? They can't do anything. Well, if there's an escalation attack, you know, some sort of zero day that lets them escalate to root just from getting in as a user, there you go. And they also say, quote, "When services are outsourced, you should provide the third party with instructions that clearly describe the measures they should take to protect the credentials used to access systems or data relating to the issuing organization." Wrong! They should tell you. They should have had their systems thoroughly audited by independent experts who know more than you. And if they haven't, don't go with them. Find one that's been independently audited and you follow their recommendations. You don't provide it to them. They provide it to you. This bad advice ends up undermining everything else because they have lots of good advice. They talk about hashing passwords, salting, using multiple iterations like LastPass does, things like that. But that does you no good if your password is monkey.
Yeah.
If it's a password that GHCQ can crack easily and get in, which seems to be their goal, well, then it's also something any self-respecting hacker with a botnet can do.
Yeah, that's my theory of why they're saying that, is because they want to tell people to protect them from ID thefts, but they want to still keep their system weak enough so if the government ever decides for whatever reason to spy on them, they can still break into it easily.
Well, it's that same contradiction I mentioned earlier. They want people to be more secure, but they also want to snoop on them, and what we're seeing here is a perfect example of that.
Yep, and the unintended consequence is that a computer hacker who does know what he's doing can easily break into it.
Oh, yeah. That's why only GCHQ could be this week's biggest bogon emitter. Hackers, terrorists, the NSA. But I repeat myself. Your online security is under attack, and the weakest point is your password. That's why you need LastPass. LastPass plugs into your browser and allows you to randomly generate strong, unique passwords anywhere on the web, all protected by one master password. LastPass sets up in minutes and gives you secure automatic logins throughout the web, synchronizing across all your browsers and all your computers, at home, at work, or on the road. It even securely stores sensitive form data, including credit card numbers. Backup sensitive documents, membership info, Wi-Fi logins, and more. And with LastPass Premium, you can get these benefits on other applications and even mobile devices, and also get priority customer support. Sign up at password.bogosity.tv for a free month of LastPass Premium. Log in securely everywhere using the last password you'll ever have to remember. Go to password.bogosity.tv and get LastPass now. And now it's time to deny clemency to this week's
Idiot Extraordinaire.
And this week it goes to Oklahoma Governor Mary Fallon for her refusal to listen to evidence that exonerates a man who is about to be executed.
Oh, great. More death penalty bullshit.
Yep, and this is Richard Glossop. His legal team has released dozens of pages of documents that cast doubt on his conviction, which is questionable anyway. So what happened was he was tried twice and sentenced to death for killing his boss, Barry Van Treese, in 1997. The guy who actually killed him is a guy named Justin Sneed. He admits he beat the guy to death with a baseball bat, but said that Glossop, who was his supervisor at the time, coerced him into doing it.
Oh, really?
The only evidence they had to convict Glossop on was Sneed's testimony. There was no physical evidence of any kind.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure his testimony is totally reliable.
Well, that's the thing. They have transcripts of the interrogations, which showed that the Oklahoma City police detectives were actually steering him towards implicating Glossop.
Oh, yeah, it's old techniques, yep.
Yeah, and it's like, you're going to get convicted and you're going to get the death penalty unless you point your finger at this guy, and that's the only way you can save your life.
Oh, yeah, that's a dirty trick about people, because anyone who says, well, he must have been guilty if he confessed to it, because why would an innocent person, you know, plead guilty? You need to take basic psychology, people. If a higher authority keeps pounding you, you're going to give in if you're not that as strong as they are.
Yeah. How is this not witness tampering?
Yeah.
I don't get that.
It's funny because I've never been called for jury duty, but, you know, I see a lot of prosecutors, you know, they say, oh, I hate TV shows like CSI because now juries, you know, are demanding we have physical evidence about the crime. And my honest opinion is that, well, yeah, you should.
Although there is kind of a thing to that as well, because that physical evidence isn't quite as conclusive as CSI makes it out to be.
Well, yeah, but still, you know, in my honest opinion, circumstantial evidence is more than often not enough to convict a person on its own. Sadly, that's what a lot of police, you know, go on nowadays. They say, does the person have a motive? Yes. Do they have the opportunity? Okay, they're guilty no matter what. It doesn't work that way, people.
Yeah, so they've got all sorts of things about how Justin Sneed basically said he was just this guy who did a little marijuana and stuff like that, and he didn't know. But then they have an affidavit from a former drug dealer who says, no, he was pretty much a meth head. They've got affidavits from people in prison who are saying that Sneed told them that he had lied to convict Glossop.
But those are prison inmates. What do they know?
So, I mean, they've got all this information. They've got leads that police failed to pursue. All sorts of information the juror never heard at his two trials. And the state is completely unmoved. Oklahoma City District Attorney David Prater said it was, quote, a bullshit PR campaign.
Oh, yeah.
But, I mean, they're saying all the typical things. It's like, no, the important thing is he got a fair trial and he got a defense and things like that. Who cares if there's actual evidence showing that he's innocent? Let's kill him.
Yeah. And that's another reason why I hate the death penalty, because, you know, it's like, okay, say whatever you want about life in prison, because believe it or not, there is a movement to ban the life in prison, but at least with life in prison, if the person is genuinely innocent, he has his entire life to fight back, and there are plenty of accounts of people who are convicted of crimes, and then 20 years later, they find new evidence that shows they were innocent, and they get out of prison, you know? I mean, it's still sad that they lost 20 years of their life, but at least they were given a second chance. A death penalty person, if you execute that person, it's later found it's innocent, you can't bring them back to life. In fact, that's actually the reason why the UK banned the death penalty, was because in the 1950s, a man was convicted of killing his wife and his infant child, a really terrible tragedy. Everyone kept saying, oh yeah, he probably did it, so he was sentenced to death by hanging. Well, a few years later, new physical evidence turned up, which shows up that he didn't commit the crime, but rather it was his neighbor who happened to be a serial killer that was on the loose at the time. And the British government was just totally embarrassed. They issued an apology to the guy's family, they gave him compensations, and they asked from then on now, we're not going to execute anyone anymore, because they understood that criminal science changes all the time, and we find it's much easier for a person who's in prison for life to prove that he really is innocent, you know, versus a person who's executed. I mean, yeah, if you're on death row, you can fight it, but your time is very limited.
So, the way Governor Fallon comes into this is that they appeal to her for a stay of execution so they could have time to put all this information forward and have the courts examine the evidence and things like that. She rejected the application, said that there was no, quote, credible evidence of Richard Glossop's innocence. So now they have to prove his innocence before she'll even temporarily stop the execution. You shouldn't have to prove innocence. All you should have to do is knock down the evidence for the prosecution's case, which in this case is only Sneed's testimony, remember. But she goes on to say, quote, After reviewing it with my legal team, we have determined the vast majority of the limited content they have presented is not new. Of course, it's all new, but... Furthermore, we find none of the material to be credible evidence of Richard Glossop's innocence.
Oh, so an overwhelming number of prisoners who say the guy who really committed the crime admitted it isn't reliable, but a testimony from one guy who's being convicted of the crime is credible?
Yeah, a known drug addict.
Yeah, you know.
Yeah, that's credible.
Yeah, that's totally credible.
Quote, after carefully reviewing the facts of this case multiple times, of course she had this like hours, so I don't know.
Yeah.
I see no reason to cast doubt on the guilty verdict reached by the jury or to delay Glossop's sentence of death.
Okay, you know what? All the evidence shows that this guy who's about to be executed is going to be executed because the governor is too stupid. And in all honesty, and this is a really good argument, for all those who support the death penalty, by your definition, taking an innocent life, because this guy is going to be executed, anyone who supports the death penalty also deserves to die, because they just killed an innocent man.
That's the paradox of the death penalty.
Yep. Don't get me wrong, I'm not trying to say that all people who are on the death penalty, you know, are innocent people, because yeah, there's some really scumbaggish people that have been executed, but the truth is, it doesn't justify it. If there's even one chance that one person's going to, even a small margin, that there's going to be one innocent person convicted to death, I still wouldn't be the death penalty.
Well, there is one good piece of good news.
What's that?
They took it to an appeals court, and the appeals court delayed the execution until September 30th. So at least now they'll have a few weeks to study the new evidence. The appeals court's going to go over it and figure out where to go from there.
Yeah, it's just sad. I hope his death penalty gets overturned. Look, I don't care what the act is. And here's the thing. I understand there are some really, really evil people on death row, but in all honesty, I think we as a civilized society should not be stooping to their level. This attitude of, oh my god, this guy killed 5 young children, so he should be tortured to death. No, that's not justice. That's just petty vengeance. You know, I think the best form of justice should be if this guy, you know, is so evil that he's going to kill a bunch of innocent children, he should be locked up in a small quarters eating a really crappy meal twice a day, you know, for the rest of his life.
So, good for the courts, but Oklahoma Governor Mary Fallon is still this week's...
Idiot Extraordinaire!
Well, that wraps up this Got Riff Back on That One edition of the Bogosity Podcast. As always, you can come to forum.bogosity.tv to read the show notes and join the discussion. This podcast depends on you to keep going, so please donate using the links on the website or at patreon.bogosity.tv, and feel free to join in by sending a question, statement, news article, or rant to podcast@bogosity.tv. You can even stick it in an audio file if you want. Thank you for listening, and thanks again to Chris Hangartner for joining me.
Yep, it's great to be back, Shane.
Until next time, here's a quote from Penn Jillette. The day is coming when we will be certain, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that we've executed an innocent person. On that day, we're all murderers. The Bogosity Podcast is licensed under Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives 3.0, and ported license.
Bogosity.
Do you want answers to creationist claims against evolution? Would you like to know more about evolution yourself, or even engage creationists more directly, with actual peer-reviewed sources to back you up? My book, How Evolution is Scientific, is designed to show the basics of evolutionary theory and how it is so well supported using the scientific method. It's impeccably sourced, with references to the actual scientific material, and is arranged using the creationists' own criteria of what is scientific. Using their own arguments against them, see how evolution is scientific, but creationism is not, based on observations, accurate predictions, logic, and evidence. Get answers to common creationist claims, and even a primer on abiogenesis, the start of all life. It's all in my book, How Evolution is Scientific, available at Amazon and on Kindle, EPUB, and PDF as well. Get How Evolution is Scientific and never be taken in by creationists again.
Pretty much the only good point brought out in the first Republican debate was when I think it was Chris Christie that said that to Rand Paul, and Rand said, get a warrant. Do an investigation, figure out who you're looking for, and get a warrant.
Yeah. Grandpa, he does have a few good points here and there. He's got a little bit of intelligence.
Yeah, people say, well, he's the best of all the Republican contenders. That's not exactly a high bar, people.
He started out good. Like, he started out really, really good, but then I don't know what happened to him. I guess he fell for what I like to call party syndrome, which is where, you know, in order to get support from the party, you eventually sacrifice your own personal beliefs for the beliefs of the party. I think deep down inside, he disagrees with almost everything the Republicans do, but he's just giving up his own soul so he can stay in power in the party, and in my opinion, that's even worse, because at least Rand Paul, you know, stood up for his beliefs, you know.
You mean Ron Paul stood up for his beliefs?
Ron Paul, yeah, Ron Paul. I mean, Ron Paul was flat out in fact, one of the biggest critics of Ron Paul, ironically, was his own party.
Oh, yeah, they were trying to do everything to keep him out and just breaking their own rules. And...
Oh, yeah. I mean, when I told some of my diehard, you know, Republican fans, you know, that I was a supporter of Ron Paul, they said, oh, Ron Paul's just an old kook who doesn't know what he's talking about.
And then you say, okay, can you rebut what he's saying?
Yeah. Yeah, Ron Paul's the reason why I no longer want the United States to bomb Iran.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
I would hope just a good memory of what went on in Iraq would be enough, but hey.
Yeah.